You're listening to Upfront on KPFA Radio. I'm Antonia Yuhas. The midterm elections are nearly upon us, and at a time when the necessity of quality, in-depth accountability journalism could not be more critical. Yet, as a brand new report from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill School of Media and Journalism finds, more and more of us are living in expanding news deserts. In fact, more than one in five papers has closed over the past decade and a half, leaving thousands of our communities at risk of becoming news deserts, with half of the counties in the country now having only one newspaper, and almost 200 counties in the country having no newspaper at all. The people with the least access to local news are often the most vulnerable, the poorest, least educated, and most isolated. And as the report finds, residents in news deserts tend to be less informed about key issues in their community, and that they are less likely to vote. To discuss the findings with us of this new report is the author, Penny Muse Abernathy. She is the Knight Chair in Journalism and Digital Media Economics at the UNC School of Media and Journalism. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for your interest in the subject.
Absolutely. And thank you for this report. It is a sweeping report. It's over 100 pages long, entitled The Expanding News Desert. It was just released. Can you explain the importance of first doing this research and for presenting the report?
Well, I'm the Knight Chair in Digital Media Economics and Journalism here at the University of North Carolina, and part of my mandate is to help newspapers come up with business models that help them transition to the digital age. Because what we've really had happen over the last 20 years is a destroying of the business models that have supported strong local journalism for 200 years in this country. There's a lot of research that shows that newspapers have been the prime, if not the sole source, of much of the news that makes it into the news ecosystem. In fact, the FCC, in a report that it did in 2011, picked up on an estimate that at least 85% of the news that makes it into the news ecosystem, either on your TV station, into even ultimately into the New York Times, originates with local newspapers. So if you think about the importance of our democracy, the importance of grassroots participation in our democracy, it really starts with local newspapers. So our goal in publishing the report was to call attention to what we saw as a what could be a tipping point for newspapers and for the role they played in giving us a strong democracy.
Well, and the report states that since 2004, almost 1,800 local newspapers have been lost since 2004, and that no location has been spared, no state has been spared, excuse me, but California has lost the most dailies, 11, and this was primarily driven by consolidation in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is where we are. Over the course of 5 years, the third largest newspaper chain in the country, Digital First, merged 8 dailies into 2 mastheads, East Bay Times and Mercury News, which together currently reach nearly 300,000 subscribers. So what does it mean when an area loses the local papers and they merge up into greater consolidation? You started talking about some of the local coverage and investigative journalism that is lost. What have you found that it means to a community to not have this type of local reporting?
Well, let me back up just a bit and say there's been a lot of research out of academia as well as in the industry that shows that local newspapers have historically performed 3 vital functions. First, they help set the agenda for debate of the kind of issues that we vote on and decide on. And they do that in a number of ways. One, they do that by the stories they decide to cover. They do that by the play that they give those stories, how long they decide to stay, editors decide to stay on the story, they determine it's important. And then third, they do that by the editorials that they write in support of certain initiatives or otherwise. So first off, we've lost that important function of kind of helping us know what's really important, cutting through all the noise, all the clutter, and saying this is an issue that is going to concern us today and could conceivably concern our children's children. So here's why it's important that we decide on these issues. The second thing they've done is they've connected local consumers with the local businesses through the advertising. So they've helped encourage regional and economic growth. So when you lose that connection and people do not connect with what is actually available in their hometown that they could support, you lose that. And then thirdly, you lose your geographic identity, which is vitally important in this political world because we're divided up into political and geographic designations. So my favorite definition of a newspaper is it shows you how you're related to people you may not know you're related to. So I think that you asked previously what I think was most surprising to me. We started out with 9,000 papers in roughly 9,000 papers in 2004, and to have lost one in five newspapers over that period. And again, what was also surprising is how many were weeklies. I mean, almost 1,700 of the 1,800 were weeklies. The weeklies, and then the double whammy sort of for people who live in rural areas or the suburbs or even the inner city neighborhoods. We've kind of had a collapse of the major metro papers and regional papers, and San Francisco is a classic example, perhaps one of the most extreme, because you had quite a number of vibrant journalistic newspapers in the San Francisco area even 15 years ago, and now basically through ownership decisions that were made about the best way to manage and run those newspapers, primarily for shareholder return, you've had a real collapse and a diminishment of news in coming out of San Francisco that affects not just the San Francisco area, but also spreads out to include the farmlands and the agricultural areas and the more rural areas around San Francisco and in the Central California area.
Well, and I thought this was a really interesting finding from the report that you mentioned, which is that the residents of America's emerging news deserts are often its most vulnerable citizens. They are generally poorer, older, and less educated than the average American. Is that because of this disproportionate impact you're talking about, often in more rural areas, becoming news deserts today?
Well, I think you have two trends going on. One, I think that we've had a move toward the cities, but I would say that also, and that has left many of the rural areas losing population. It has left many of the rural areas struggling to kind of build a social identity, show themselves how they're related to people in an adjacent county, or maybe not in an adjacent county, but another county across the state. So if you look at the metro papers, what they traditionally did is they kind of showed you how all people in a region were related to one another. They also tended to come in and do the investigative pieces that maybe the weekly paper could not afford to do, which in turn inspired the weekly paper to go after that story and follow it too. So I think that what you've had happen is you've had a normal migration toward the city, leaving many of these rural communities struggling to find an identity, especially as manufacturing and jobs were moved abroad over the last couple of three decades. So I come from a small rural community in North Carolina. And over the course of the last two decades of the 20th century, it lost textiles and it lost furniture manufacturing, which had enabled people who remained in those rural areas to basically live a middle-class life. So then there's been nothing that's really replaced it. So I think what you find is that as the news organizations pull back from a state area, as well as the local weeklies began to suffer, there was less and less news. You have a cutback in staffing across the board there, and you have to make judgment calls about what you're going to cover. So you are less informed. There's been recent research out of Stanford by the economist Jay Hamilton that really pointed to the trouble you have to go to get information when you live in a rural news desert. So I think that there are two dual trends going on. One is the notion that you have there's a lack of economic support to bring really good news to those areas, and that puts a real a burden on people who want to stay informed to actually go looking for it. And the easiest thing to do when you can't find it is to turn to Facebook.
And you had mentioned the consolidation in the San Francisco Bay Area and all the issues that you've just raised that you face where you live in a rural area of North Carolina are similar issues that we face here. I mean, not only are there fewer outlets, but as the report also points out, that also impacts us here in the Bay Area. Since 2004, newsroom employment and the number of journalists employed by newspapers has been cut in half. So that's since 2004. So there's less people being journalists and providing journalism, and there's less outlets that are providing that information to the public. So definitely when we're looking around as a radio station, looking at who are the print newspaper journalists who are covering elections at the local level across the state, who's covering state level elections out of Sacramento, there are just fewer and fewer and fewer people to turn to. And those that are left are having to do much more. So you've got a few journalists left having much larger plates and much more information that they have to cover on their plate, less time for investigative work, less time to really provide the type of deep and in-depth reporting that we as the public need. And then, as you've mentioned also, we used to have a paper here called the Guardian newspaper that would print a voting guide that many people you would see take into the voting booth with them. It was, you know, where they knew that they could get a progressive set of voting guidance, and that's now gone. And there hasn't been a paper that has replaced it. So also, as you've said, that editorial information is missing. Well, and then so we don't have digital or social media really filling this space or this void. But you do then talk about who the new owners are of media and consolidation taking place within the media. So you write about the investment firms that came in and introduced a new way of thinking about the business management of newspapers and their journalistic mission, which often ran counter to the historic practices of traditional print newspaper companies. The standard operating formula often included aggressive cost cutting, the adoption of advertiser friendly policies, the sale or shuttering of underperforming newspapers, and financial restructuring, including bankruptcy. I want to just drill in on this one particular point, the adoption of advisor-friendly policies. To what extent have you seen content, meaning, you know, challenging corporations, challenging banks, challenging money leaders within a local community fall off because of, one, the lack of coverage, but also the type of ownership that has taken over of the outlets that are left?
Well, there have been quite a few instances where you have had a less aggressive form of reporting. I think where we saw it first and see it most immediately is in the editorial writing. One of the things that if you come in and you have bought a lot of local papers, editorial pages are often unpopular with people who disagree with them. So what you often see is some of the first people laid off were the people who were writing the editorials. And as a result, you don't have strong editorials one way or the other, or you have editorials that come out and say, you know, we're not going to make a recommendation this year. I was looking at a couple of California papers that historically made recommendations that did not make one in 2016. So, I mean, if you are in a, if you're voting in a state in which has a large number of elected officials, you may know who you a lot about the governor. You may even know a lot about the lieutenant governor and maybe the attorney general. But if you've got the commissioner of agriculture or the labor secretary in a state, you have often depended on a newspaper both to write about what the policies are that those people are advocating and then to come out on the editorial page with recommendations going all the way down. As to we vetted these people. These are the one. This is why we're supporting them when you go into the election booth.
And then also, you know, the issues of wrongdoing or corruption within a community, pollution, If you don't have local journalists who, one, if they're not there, or two, if they're not free to have the time to do it, or they're editorially told not to do it, you're not going to have that type of information made available, which would mean not only are those actors not held accountable, but then when it does come to election time and people need to make decisions based on what their elected officials have or have not been doing in office, that information also hasn't been provided over the course of the year or 2 years in between elections, or 4 years or 6 years in between elections. And that seems to be, you know, a particular problem that we're facing now as well, having the appropriate information about the actors within society to make good decisions on when we vote. Can you talk about Alden Capital, the owner of papers in the Bay Area?
Before I do that, let me make another point. You know, it may surprise people to learn that when you win Pulitzers, you're often not popular with your advertisers, especially if you've done won a Pulitzer Prize for an investigative piece that showed wrongdoing in a community. So it is a tough business decision to make to decide I'm going to go after something that's going to make my community look bad. What you often do is you lose advertisers in that over the period of after it's published, because people are really angry with the paper for showing their dirty laundry. So A, it takes editorial coverage, but B, it takes financial resources that extend beyond just going out to do the investigative piece. So if you have a hedge fund or a private equity fund, such as Alden Capital, come in, they do not have that traditional dual commitment to both serving the community, such as a Knight Ridder or a McClatchy had, with the commitment to improve shareholder return. So they're primarily focused on shareholder return, and in the case, and the newspapers are a part of their portfolio. So many of these private equity funds and newspapers may account, revenue from newspapers that they own, even if they own hundreds of them, may account for only about 1% or 2% of total revenue from all the enterprises they own. So in the case of Alden Capital, they own pharmacies in Canada. They've taken out positions on Greek debt, for instance. So if those portfolios go bad, they tend to turn to the newspapers to rely on them to make up the difference so the shareholders stay happy.
And Alden Capital owns which papers in the Bay Area?
It owns the San Francisco Bay Area's papers. So it basically bought the papers that were owned by Media News, the Dean Singleton Company, and the Knight Ridder papers that were in that Bay Area. And so they have combined them into the East Bay Times and what was the San Jose Mercury. So papers that had won and had quite a few, and accumulated quite a few Pulitzers, have been combined. We've gone from basically eight papers in the San Francisco Bay Area down to two now.
Okay, and that's the consolidation under two mastheads, the East Bay Times and the Mercury News. As we have the midterm elections coming up, and this question of when people are receiving less local news, they are less informed and they are less likely to vote, what should be done? What should communities be demanding of media sources? Where should people turn for good media? You know, what should be done at this point with all this incredibly dismal information?
Well, there is hope. Let me say that, and part of it is I think we need to do what we would call crowdsourcing. So one of the things we did is publish an interactive website with maps for each of the states, where you can drill down to the county level, get a good deal of information about media health in your state and in your county, and compare it to the demographics too. So what we really need is community activists. We need philanthropy. We need the profession itself. We need journalists. We need government officials at both the state and local level as well, to basically sort of come together and pinpoint what areas are most in need. That was one of the reasons we wanted to publish an interactive map that showed where there were there were no newspapers, where there were papers that where there were only one, there was only one newspaper that we were depending on. And I think there's several things. One, I think we need to acknowledge that at least in some of these news deserts that are really struggling economically, there is not right now an economic model, and we need to pinpoint philanthropy and all nonprofit and public funding toward addressing those issues, those journalistic issues.
So shifting to a nonprofit model that outlets like ProPublica are using, or community funded, such as our station KPFA uses, which is fully community supported.
Right, exactly. The problem has been, according to a study in Harvard that was published several months ago, only 5% of the $3 billion that has gone to news organizations in the last 5 years has actually gone to state and local news organizations. Most of it goes to national and international news organizations, national ones like ProPublica. So we need to first, on a nonprofit, address where the areas are that are most at risk and figure out different nonprofit or public funding for those areas to get the journalism back in there that will help us know what issues are out there and inform us and educate us as citizens. The second thing we need to do is we need to have a lot more interaction between universities, between the profession, and between the government, but community activists in coming up with for-profit models. We can't rely solely on this country on non-profit models. We're going to have even bigger and vaster news deserts than we have right now. I have just spent a good deal of time over the last 10 years looking at what works, and there are at least three things that we've discovered that do work with whether you're a startup digital news organization or whether you are a legacy one. First and foremost, you have to invest in your human capital, and the human capital, what people need from a newspaper, are both the journalistic function, the newsroom function, and the sales and marketing function that helps engender regional economic growth and revitalization, community building, as we would call it. The second thing you need to do is you need to realize that the business model that supported newspapers over the last 100 and so years is basically broken. So you have to develop a business model that is unique to your community and serves the needs of your community. And then thirdly, you have to take the long-term view. You have to look 5 years out, which unfortunately, most of the investment entities that have bought newspapers at rock-bottom prices have taken a very short-term view. So you've got to say, here's what I need to do to be in business 5 years from now. That may mean that you don't do some things you've done in the past, but that you really need to double down on investing in that human capital that is going to get you, set you apart, serve the needs of the community, and get you to the five-year mark.
Fantastic. I'm afraid, unfortunately, that that's all that we have time for. And the website is usnewsdeserts.com. Thank you so much. Our guest, Professor Penny Muse Abernathy, is the Knight Chair in Journalism and Digital Media Economics at the UNC School of Media and Journalism. And the new report is The Expanding News Desert. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.